Happy Tuesday, April 16th. And would you believe it's been 21 years since Michael Jordan's last game in the NBA at aged 40. He received a 3-minute standing ovation that night playing for the Washington Wizards. That's a great name, by the way. And if you haven't seen it already, I can highly recommend the movie Air, which is based on the origins of the Nike Air Jordan. Great movie, and I wasn't even paid to say that. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. How the government's latest pets and rentals proposals will help victims of domestic violence escape dangerous relationships. Are we on the brink of a major conflict in the Middle East after Iran's weekend missile attacks on Israel? What on earth is going on at NZ Rugby, and why is the board chair threatening to resign? Plus, what happened after a German art gallery employee decided to hang up their own artwork in the museum? All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Finding a pet-friendly rental potentially just got much easier with the government announcing its plans to introduce new measures for animal-owning tenants and landlords. Pet bonds set at a maximum of 2 weeks' rent would become an option that could be charged in addition to existing bonds required. And tenants will become liable for all pet damages to properties beyond reasonable wear and tear. While it'll be music to many animal-loving tenants' ears, Housing Minister Chris Bishop also pointed to the policy aiding in domestic violence situations, as some people choose to stay in the relationships to look after their pets' safety. Someone who knows that situation all too well is Julie Chapman from Pet Refuge, which provides temporary animal shelter so that survivors can find homes for themselves. Julie, welcome to Newsable.
Thank you. Great to be here.
What sort of impact do you see this having for victims of domestic abuse? Is something like this going to actually make a difference?
Oh, well, first of all, I think it's just great news for pet owners all across New Zealand in general that need to rent their houses. But for us in particular at Pet Refuge, we think this will make it easier for victims of family violence who need to leave or want to leave with their pet to make that decision. We take in pets for generally up to 4 months to house them while their families are in emergency accommodation or women's refuge or other places. And we know that that makes it easier for people to leave. But at the other end of the scale, when they come to the point where they need to find a new place to live that gives them safety for them, their kids and pets, those properties are few and far between. So we think this could be a bit of a game changer for our clients.
Julie, what does research tell us about the link between domestic violence victims and pets and staying in relationships to protect the animal?
We participated in research that was run by Women's Refuge in 2018 and released in 2019. And that research, which was completed by almost 1,000 women, showed that 53% of them delay leaving family violence out of fear for their pet's safety. 23% had a pet killed at the hands of the perpetrator of the abuse. But encouragingly, 73% said that they would leave sooner if there was a place for their pets to go. Hence, Pet Refuge was started. And so now I think this policy kind of closes the loop, if you will, on people's ability to then go out and find somewhere safe to start their new lives together with their furry friends.
I've crunched the numbers on the cost because it is great to see a maximum set at 2 weeks rent for a pet bond. Some renters, though, could be looking at paying close to $4,000 once you include a 4-week bond on top of that as well. That's based on the average Wellington weekly rent, which is $640. That was in late 2023. It is going to still be quite a lot of money for a renter to stump up.
Yeah, look, I think rents are challenging enough as they are, right? But also we do know that financial abuse is part of family violence. So getting that pet bond together may be challenging in some circumstances. And so I think there is an opportunity for this to be recognised by other ministries, but also potentially organisations like ours that may be able to help in some way to contribute to that down the track.
Of course, it is a maximum there, so there's no guarantee that landlords will be charging that maximum amount. Turning down to Pet Refuge and your work, how many pets do you currently have on site?
I think we've got over 40 currently at the moment, and that is spread across cats, dogs, and equine, so horses, and we've also got a donkey in our care at the moment.
That is absolutely wonderful work you do. And look, I can't let you go without asking you on the record how many pets you have, because I understand you have quite a few. So a policy like this could have come in handy if you were into yourself, Julie.
Well, absolutely. Although I think most landlords would probably turn me down. I am fortunate that my husband and I do have a house that we own. I do have 13 cats. They're all rescues and they've all got various issues like blindness or deafness, missing ears, missing eyes, all of those sorts of things. 10 goats. Oh, a pet turkey as well, who was a lot of fun.
Here we go. Julie Chapman from Pet Refuge. Great to chat and thank you for the work you do.
Thank you for having me.
If you've got something to say, you know you can always get in touch. Email me, newsable@stuff.co.nz. And if you have not already, make sure you're following NZ Stuff on Instagram for all our newsable polls and bonus video content too. Diplomatic efforts have been unleashed with renewed fervour in an effort to keep a lid on an unprecedented escalation and conflict between Israel and Iran. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has condemned Iran's drone and missile attack on Israel over the weekend, urging for all parties in the Middle East to be restrained and de-escalate tensions in the region. The US President Joe Biden has urged Israel not to retaliate, saying to take the win over the fact it was largely seen off with the help of allies. But is there any way to keep a lid on this situation? Leon Goldsmith is a senior lecturer on Middle Eastern politics at Otago University and is back with us again. Leon, welcome back to Newsable.
Thanks very much for having me back.
What will be influencing Netanyahu's decision making when it comes to any retaliation here?
The US is going to be placing a fairly firm hand on his shoulder. But of course, he'll experience a lot of pressure from his own constituency and his own coalition to respond in kind and, in fact, to respond very dramatically. So I think that's the two things. I think he'll be very much concerned by not pushing it too far in terms of his US relationship. The fact that the US and also countries like Jordan stood up and actually helped them to see off this attack was quite a good sign for the Israelis, and I don't know if they want to push that. And the US has certainly said that they will not coordinate or help in any way with any kind of retaliation against Iran directly.
Iran's missile attack was in retaliation for that bombing allegedly by Israel on the Iranian consulate in Syria. So was that solely focused on the Hamas attack in October?
Yeah, well, so a lot of the regional coordination by people like Mohammad Reza Zahidi, the general that they killed, he's like a very senior leader within the IRGC, and he's been coordinating things from Damascus between al-Houthi, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. So basically they're striking at the nerve center of what the Israelis see as the regional struggle, which is currently focused on Gaza, but they see it in a more regional sense.
I'd be interested to know what you make of New Zealand's response to the conflict. Are we being too passive? But then also, what weight at all would our words hold if we became more aggressive or assertive?
Well, I think it's correct to condemn the Iranian strike. It's also probably correct to condemn the unprecedented strike by the Israelis against Iranian territory in terms of their consulate. But I think the most prudent thing for New Zealand is to add our voice to those trying to hold Israel back, because I think that is the key equation here, to hold Israel back from what they're more than capable of doing. They have a qualitative advantage over Iran massively in terms of their air power. They've been planning strikes against Iranian territory since the mid-2000s. They're ready to do this. So what the consequences of that could be quite catastrophic in terms of regional stability.
What does happen from here? Can Israel be held back?
It's really hard to say. Israel, and especially the current government, is not in any moods whatsoever just to revert to a status quo situation. I think from very early days of the post-October 7 attack, they made a decision that they were going to try to be more proactive in terms of preserving their security vis-a-vis the resistance axis, which got them basically surrounded except for Jordan and Egypt. So there will be further consequences of this. I think Israel will do something. Just what, at what scale and what will be the consequence of that, I'm not sure yet.
Leon Goldsmith from Otago University. Great to unpack all of that with you. Thank you for your time.
Most welcome.
We're about to find out what the deal at NZ Rugby is and what's at risk if the argument is not resolved. But hey, if you are enjoying what you're hearing, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform because it'll mean other people find us. Trouble is afoot in the halls of NZ Rugby because it seems no one can agree on a new governance model. Last year, a review into the organisation's governance was carried out and it ended up calling for major changes, noting New Zealand Rugby's structures were not fit for purpose in the modern era. Goodness me, what does that mean? Going as far as to say the whole board should resign. Words were not minced here, but it seems we're now at a stalemate with no end in sight. So here to bring us properly up to speed with everything is senior sports reporter for The Press, Richard Nola. Kia ora.
Kia ora, how you going?
Great, thank you. Richard, how have we ended up in this position? What the heck's going on?
Well, it all started with the deal that they brokered with the private equity firm Silver Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Which probably many people would be aware of, that dragged on for a couple of years. But last year, everyone smoked the peace pipe and finally got down to business and agreed a way forward. For that to go ahead, that needed to be endorsed by the provincial unions, New Zealand Rugby, who essentially hold a lot of power, obviously, you know, given the history that they have in the game. But a part of that deal with Silver Lake, in a nutshell, was that there would be an independent governance review held. Now, New Zealand Rugby did say, look, we review our governance on a regular basis. Why do another one? But the New Zealand Rugby Players Association said, look, we think it needs to be done independently. And so what happened is they brought in a governance expert, David Pilkington, and him, along with some other folks, like including former All Blacks captain Graham Maury, conducted a review of everything, and they came up with their ideas, and they're basically saying that New Zealand Rugby is a massive organisation that's not publicly listed. It turns over $100 million a year. You need to have a new governance structure. So what they recommended is in the Pilkington report, and basically they came out, they're saying, we have a new board structure that we recommend that you go ahead with. And that was probably around the end of August. They made that recommendation, and here we are. Still no decision has been made.
What was wrong with the governance structure as it was? Why is it not fit for purpose in the modern era?
Pilkington, for example, he's a former Fonterra executive. So if you're on a large company like that, you have specialists. It's a bit like you're in the share market, isn't it? You buy shares, you expect to have a board that's going to be competent and capable. And I'm not saying the New Zealand Rugby board they have at the moment isn't competent and capable. What they were saying is we need more people who are geared up to deal with this as a high turnover industry, a big business. And the board as it stands, it has representatives from provincial unions who I would say do have a deep love of the game. And you can't argue that a lot of them are probably highly qualified in the businesses they've been involved in. But whether they are fit for purpose to run a company of this magnitude is, what Pilkington basically said, no, it was not fit for purpose. We need a new board. And now it's come to the sticking point that after that recommendation, New Zealand Rugby have come back with their own little tweaks, and the provincial unions, they've also tabled their own ideas around it with their own little tweaks. So that's where it's at.
You bring up the provincial unions and their proposal. What's the deal there? Because I've read New Zealand Rugby chair Dame Patsy Reddy is threatening to resign if what they've put forward comes to fruition. That sounds dramatic to me.
Yes, it is. I guess obviously behind the scenes I'd say there's been a lot of debate, and that's one thing is we're not privy to what goes in behind the scenes, you know, but I would say she's probably at the end of her tether. I mean, they're saying that we wanted three places on the board. She's saying, well, I'm not going to have that. I don't want that. So she's obviously said, look, either you jump on board with their recommendation, and let's not forget her recommendation of her board is not exactly the same as the Pilkington report, which is, so then you've got the Players Association saying to New Zealand Rugby as well, hang on, what you're wanting is not what Pilkington said. So you've got three different groups going at it here, and somehow they're going to have to smoke the peace pipe, and it's going to come to some special meeting at an undisclosed time.
What is at risk, Richard, if all of this falls apart or continues as it is with no decision?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I think it'd be fair to say you don't want to get offside with the New Zealand Rugby Players Association. We saw that during Silver Lake. New Zealand Rugby didn't handle that well. We need to get these parties to gel and work together.
Goodness gracious me, indeed we do. Senior sports reporter for The Press, Richard Nola. Kia ora, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read From Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read From Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
I found what's quite possibly the funniest ask for forgiveness, not permission example ever, only that in this case, asking for forgiveness did not work because the person promptly lost their job afterwards. According to overseas news outlets, a German art gallery employee has been fired after hanging their own artwork in one of the museum's exhibitions. Not only that, the spot they hung it up in, that was the first painting you saw when you entered said exhibit. And the matter has also been reported to the local police because of property damage in the form of the two holes the staffer had to drill to hang their painting up. Now, interestingly, the exhibition the staffer hung their own painting in was called Glitch on the Art of Interference. That's the entire name, Glitch on the Art of Interference. But before you think this was a stunt by the gallery to get more people in the door, this is the Pinakothek Gallery, which has one of Europe's largest collections of modern and contemporary art. So I don't think they'll be struggling to attract art enthusiasts. But also, a spokesperson for the museum told local media that this was a wannabe artist trying to make an artistic breakthrough. And of course, there are now potential criminal charges involved, and said wannabe artist is now without a job. So this is not some sort of stunt. This is just someone with a lot of chutzpah trying to slip their own artwork into an exhibition, which to me, I find very funny. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. And hey, get in touch, by the way, if you've ever tried something similar at your work. It would bring me so much joy if someone listening had a same-same but different, or maybe same-same, hung their own painting in an art gallery story. Email me, newsable@stuff.co.nz, and have a great day.
Newsable. News that's worth talking about. If you liked it and reckon it's also worth supporting, please make a contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues.
Don't want to be held to account rising child abuse numbers.
You can manipulate crime statistics.
I promised I wouldn't have a tag to you about gotcha journalism.
Hang into the National Party's tagline there.
It would be a resignation offence if I didn't deliver tax reduction.
I'm not worried about it at all.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on.
Whatever happens in politics, the weird, the wonderful, the important, the thought-provoking, we got you. Listen to Tova wherever you get your podcasts.